Broadcasting live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios.
30 seconds.
And now the act you've all been waiting for.
Now back to the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show.
I am the smartest man alive.
Call Johnny now at 844-5600.
Funny name for a guy.
20 years of sports coverage. This is Nashville's sports original.
Stop what you're doing. And listen,
WNSR 560 on 95.9 FM.
Here's Johnny.
Thunderstick. Yeah, Thunderstick.
And welcome to hour number two. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios. The coldest team in town, offering great wages and benefits for drivers to join their winning team. If you would like more information, go to the website, gogginkold.com. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, around 5:35, award-winning sports reporter and sports anchor with News 2, WKRN-TV here in Nashville, Kayla Anderson, part of the show. But right now, going back to the hotline, our good buddy John Glennon. He's with The Athletic here in Nashville. Chance to talk some Titans, Preds, and more. First of all, John, appreciate you, and always we love having our visits with you. Welcome back to the show.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Johnny.
All right. So, surprised with the move as far as the Titans turning things over to Ryan Tannehill, or was it one of these things that you kind of anticipated? Because for me, even on Sunday, my gut told me then that he would be starting against the Chargers coming up this week.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought so as well. I don't think this was, an impulse move on the part of Mike Vrabel. I don't think it was certainly a one-game kind of decision. You know, when you go 10 quarters and your offense scores only 7 points, you know, you start looking for answers. You start looking for things that you can change. And, you know, there are certainly plenty of things wrong with the Titans, you know, offensive line, receivers not getting it open as often as they should be. But it's easier in some respects if you have a lot of things going wrong. If you can only replace one person, maybe that's the way to go. And, certainly Marcus Mariota had his share of struggle, in some of the past few weeks. And not totally shocked. I think, he wants to, Mike Vrabel wants a jump start, wants a spark, and he's going to see if Ryan Tannehill can do that.
When we look at what Ryan Tannehill brings to the table, first of all, just hearing him earlier today, you know, one of the things that stood out today and has always stood out for me, watching him waiting. And, you know, sometimes when you're in a backup role, you're not always engaged, per se. I go back to when Vince Young would get benched or whatever, and he was so – you could not get any further away from the football field despite the fact he was actually on the football field. But Ryan Tannehill's been engaged since every play. He's been there. And I looked at his eyes after the Indianapolis game, and I don't think this decision was made just because of what happened on Sunday. My guess tells me, based on the way they played against Indianapolis – that conversation was probably starting then, and it continued against Jacksonville. The only reason we probably haven't seen this move prior to it, and I said it before it happened, I said until Taylor Lewan gets back, until Marcus Mariota has a chance with, you know, your offensive line in front of you all to be intact, then there's not going to be a move made. And so I even threw out there, if it was going to be made against Denver, and that's how this played out.
Yeah, as you said, I certainly don't think it was an impulse at all. But yeah, your point to Ryan Tannehill, I mean, it's such a big difference, you know, for the Titans now in turning to a backup as to what it was, you know, the past few years. This is something the Titans simply could not do for the past several years because of the likes of the, you know, Matt Castles or Blaine Gabberts or Zach Mettenberger. You know, those are the guys that you're not just going to say, hey, our starter is struggling, why don't we give you a shot? Because there was such a significant drop-off. Ryan Tannehill, very experienced, been around the block as a starter. He's not going to have a deer in the headlights look for his first start of the season this Sunday, I don't think either. And, you know, some of the things that I liked in just his quick appearance there, you know, about a quarter and a half versus Denver, I did notice the arm strength, I thought, significant difference to me. Sideline patterns were hitting receivers in smaller windows than what we had seen from Marcus Mariota. You know, he got Torrey Davis involved immediately in the game, which, you know, Marcus had not completed any passes to Corey that day. And as I say, just getting the ball downfield a little bit more often as well. You know, he had that big pass over the middle to Anthony Firkser to bring the Titans down into scoring territory. So, you know, I think that to me showed some signs of vitality, some signs of strength. And I think he's naturally going to give the team a spark. I think anytime something like this happens, there's a little bump. You know, players have a little bit more adrenaline, whether it's saying, hey, boy, this could happen to me if I don't watch, you know, if I don't watch out, I could be replaced too. I think there's naturally a little boost that we'll see from the Titans this weekend.
And I said it earlier, and I think you alluded to it. I said it last hour too. It'd be just like a Major League Baseball team where your team stinks, so you're not going to fire all the players. So what happens? You replace the manager. This is just one of the issues with this team. I think you have to evaluate John Robinson's job, especially in the last couple of years. You have to evaluate Mike Vrabel, his decisions as far as his coaching staff. I'm still not convinced that he has the right guy taking care of the offensive line, per se. You look at the fact, too, that, you know, the reason why a move was made in the first place, and remember, it wasn't like this team was coming off a 5-27 record. This team won a playoff game on the road at Kansas City. Now, I understand it wasn't Patrick Mahomes, it was Alex Smith, but the bottom line is they did go on the road and win a playoff game. Now, you can also make the argument that team also blew the chance to win the AFC South because they fell apart down the end. But the point is, we look at where they were then, and they were poised to, quote-unquote, get to greatness, and they're going backwards.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. You know, going into this season, I looked at the Titans and said, you know, that's a 9-7 team. It's a good team, and they appeared to have addressed weaknesses very well. You bring in Stafford to bolster a line that had given up too many sacks. You bring in Humphreys as a nice option on third downs and a chain mover. You know, you bring back Vaccaro. You add Wake as a good pass rusher. And to me, you know, I looked on the roster and I said, you know, there are not a lot of glaring weaknesses on this team. So it's a disappointment, certainly, where the Titans stand right now. And, you know, Marcus is just the kind of the most visible symbol of that, I think. And you know, you can't replace an entire offensive line, an entire wide receiver core, and it's unlikely that you're going to switch a coordinator in the middle of the season. So there you have it. It's Marcus who takes it on the chin because of this.
Well, Vrabel's already said it's not coaching. He said, look, the offensive line, they know who they're supposed to. They know their assignments. They know who they're supposed to block. So it's not it's the players. It's not the coaching, according to Mike Vrabel. I go back in the future, the next hire, if they go the direction of somebody without experience as a head coach in the NFL, I hope that they do what they did with the defensive side of the ball, where they get somebody with experience in Dean Pease. I hope they do that on both sides of the ball, because last year, Matt LaFleur, offensive coordinator, yes, never called a single play ever in the NFL. And the same applies to this year with Arthur Smith. And so moving forward, if we are in this situation, and, you know, we may be facing that again down the road if this team doesn't respond, and because we may be talking about who's the next head coach of the Tennessee Titans. I hope if they do go the same direction they went this time, that they at least get some experience with the two coordinators.
Yeah, you would hope so, certainly. But, you know, it's interesting, too, the last time that the Titans had a real offensive mind, of course, as a head coach or someone who was considered kind of a big-time offensive mind, it was Ken Wisenhunt, who we all know that certainly didn't work out as well. So it's not always a matter of the head coach or the coordinator as well, but, you know, a combination thereof. But I think, you know, looking ahead too, you know, I think when you're in the situation the Titans are, and they're probably – you'd have to guess that they're going to be taking a quarterback in the first round in the upcoming draft. You know, maybe you buy yourself a little bit of a time of time if you're both the GM and a head coach that's under fire. You know, both of these guys can say, hey, you know, Mark, we came in here and Marcus was already here. He's not our guy. Give us a chance to get our guy in here and see what happens. You know, and that way you buy yourself another year or two saying, let us build our team around our quarterback and we can make things better. So we'll see if the Titans go down that road here in the next year.
Yeah, you bring up Kim Wisenhunt. Yeah, here's a guy in his last 3 years, two of his last three seasons as head coach with Arizona, he was 5-11. Overall, 18-30. Yeah, that just screams that he's the guy. He should be the next guy's head coach of the Titans. I mean, am I wrong there? I mean, I'm just confused here. And plus, he wasn't really a nice guy. Nobody really liked him. I mean, am I wrong? And no one really liked him at all.
No, I think certainly he had not had the best relationship, certainly with the media, and I don't think inside the building he was, you know, it was the warmest of men to deal with either, is my take on it as well. But I think the Titans at that point were, you know, there were a number of offensive-minded head coaches that had been picked up in the last year or two, and I think the Titans were trying to find some magic in that department as well. You know, they saw a trend developing that the most all of the teams seemed to be hiring offensive-minded head coaches. They wanted to find the next whiz, no pun intended there. Tommy Smith, who was one of the guys in charge of the search at that point, you know, basically I think directed Rustin Webster to say, hey, give me one of these guys. One of these offensive whiz kids.
You mean Tommy Smith, the head coach whisperer, just like a horse whisperer out there? You mean that one? That Tommy Smith?
That's right. Where are you, Tommy? Clearly it was evident as it was in the first go-round that Ken was better as an offensive coordinator, especially one when he had Phillip Rivers, than he was as a head coach.
All right, so what are your expectations for Sunday with the Chargers? Because the Chargers, they're a little ticked off. They've lost two straight. Here's a team that certainly, when you look at where they are in their division, everybody assumed it would be Kansas City, but Chargers certainly a team that felt like they're good enough to make a run as far as a playoff spot. They've lost four out of their last five after winning the first game against Indianapolis. So they're coming in very ticked off, very angry, and what do the Titans have to do to win? I actually, believe it or not, I actually like the Titans' chances on Sunday at home against the Chargers.
Well, I mean, it should be a pretty even game. I think it's two, you know, as you kind of set the scene there, it's two sort of desperate teams. You know, they're both at 2-4. You're still, you know, I think the Titans are only a game and a half back in the playoff chase right now. If you lose another and you're three games under 500, you know, almost halfway through the season, you're looking at a pretty big hole you're digging out of. So the loser of this game, you know, is really going to have some difficulties going forward. You know, the Chargers, it's a little surprising when you look at a Chargers team that over the last couple of weeks anyway has only averaged 15 points per game. You just don't see that much. You know, for a Phillip Rivers team, for a Chargers team with weapons like you know, Keenan Allen and you know, Melvin Gordon and so forth. But boy, I have to say, if there's any team out there that has given the Titans fits over the years beyond the Indianapolis Colts, it's the Chargers. And if it's a quarterback beyond Andrew Luck that has given the Titans fits, it's been Phillip Rivers. I was just looking at his numbers a minute ago against the Titans. 7-1 in his 8 starts, 15 touchdowns, 4 picks, and a 109.1 quarterback rating against the Titans over the years. So, you know, if the Titans are going to win this game, they have to find a way to contain Phillip Rivers better than they have over the years.
I wonder, have you ever had a chance to ask him, is it because he's a native of Decatur, Alabama. That's where his dad was a high school coach down there in North Alabama. And I wonder if there's a little bit of that. You never know what motivates players to have kind of games that they do. And you wonder if there's, in the back of his mind, there's a little bit of that working here.
You never know. I mean, certainly he's put up some big numbers and some great games against pretty much every team out there over the years. But, yeah, he does seem to save something special for the regional team here. It was, you know, it's kind of interesting, too, when you think back. You know, there are the rumors flying a few years back that, you know, that the Tigers might be willing to deal Phillip Rivers to the Titans. I think this is back when the Titans held the number one draft pick. I think.
Well, he did not want to make the move to, you know, with all of his kids. He did not want to make the move from San Diego to Los Angeles, and that's why he was out there.
Exactly. And you know, at the time, you know, it already looked, you know, in some respects, that hey, Phillip Rivers, it's interesting, but he's kind of getting up in years a little bit. But boy. Yeah, you talk about a guy who has held up well over the years. Phillip Rivers has certainly done that.
And here's the thing, too. Since the quote-unquote Houston Oilers moved to the state of Tennessee, very first game, by the way, as far as the Tennessee Oilers back in 98, very first NFL contest was against the San Diego Chargers, Ryan Leaf. They lose that one 13-7. The Chargers franchise... 10-1 against the Tennessee Oilers/Titans since 98.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure that may or may not include a playoff game.
It does. It does. It was a wild card game, okay. So it does include that as well.
Yeah, but it's just one of those situations. You know, there's some teams that seem to all they have to do is throw on a jersey and they can beat the other team, and that's what's been the case. For the Chargers against the Titans over the, you know, it goes way, way back. But certainly Phillip Rivers is a big part. But this is, you know, this is a game, you know, I think if the Titans want to have a sniff of getting back into the playoff chase, boy, you're going to have a tough time of things if you're 2-5. You know, if you win, you're back to 3-4. You got another home game after that. And who knows, you know, maybe you're 500 halfway through the season and you still got some big divisional games coming up down the stretch, but a real big one, I think, here for the Titans. And again, I do think you're going to see a little boost, especially on that offense. I think it's just natural, you know, whether it's a quarterback change or a coach change, teams seem to ratchet things up a little bit when there's a significant change. So we'll see if that plays out, and we'll see if that arm strength that I talked about. You know, plays a different role too. I'm sure the Titans would like to get the ball downfield and take some deep shots a little bit more than they have in recent games. Maybe open up some of that, you know, inside the trenches area for Derrick Henry. Get some of those guys out of the box. So, you know, perhaps Tannehill will help in that department as well.
Yeah, you just stole my thunder because I was exactly what I was going to say, that expect a good game from Derrick Henry, mainly because Ryan Tannehill with his arm, the Chargers defense, they can't pack 9 men in the box. They're going to have to back away and trust the passing game a little bit more, or respect it, I should say. And also remember last year when they met in London, it was week 7, and at that time the Matt LaFleur run offense, they were playing the balanced attack. Dion, you get to carry this time. Derek, you get to carry this time. And they were going back and forth. It's a different scenario this year, that now that we know Henry is the guy back there, and you wonder how much that will be a difference maker too on Sunday.
Yeah, you feel sorry for center steps for Derek Henry. I think, you know, the big question was, is he going to be the same guy as we saw down the stretch last year? Or is he going to slide back to what we've previously seen of Derrick Henry? Honestly, I think he's running as hard as he did the last quarter of last year. You know, the big knock on him before was, you know, he was kind of bouncing too many things outside. He wasn't taking what the defense was giving him. You know, just get those 4 yards or so on plays and wait for the big one to break. I think he's running pretty well, but you know, there was a stat I saw out there on Twitter today. He's averaging 0.8 yards before contact per carry, and no one else in the NFL with more than 35 carries is averaging under a yard before contact. So that gives you an idea that's certainly not Derrick Henry's fault that he's kind of the numbers haven't been there the last few weeks. I think, you know, the opponents are just not worried right now about that passing game, and Derrick Henry is running through a lot of eight-man boxes, and you're not going to find too many openings when that's the case.
All right, I have two words for you as we start talking about the Nashville Predators, Matt Duchene. What has he meant so far through these first six contests?
Holy cow, what a difference maker. There's no doubt about it. You know, we've seen a couple of games where the Preds have you know, forgotten to play a little bit of defense and paid the price. But, boy, you talk about entertaining teams right now. In some respects, there's sort of a little bit of the opposite of the Tennessee Titans in a different sport. You know, they are bringing it in the goal department. I am fairly sure they're leading the league in average goals per game. And Matt Duchene, of course, is a huge reason. All kinds of assists already. A couple of goals as well. And what we're seeing now, largely because of Matt Duchene and his line, Philip Forsberg as well, is that we're seeing a lot more production from the forwards in general, and that was the idea for the Predators. You know, they had always gotten a pretty good amount of production from their D-men, but the forwards were struggling, weren't holding up their end of the bargain. And now the fact that you've got Duchene allows you to balance those first two lines, and teams can't, really stack up against one or the other. And man, they are a lively bunch to watch, that's for sure.
I mean, I know it's early, but they're on pace to make it three straight years of reaching the century mark as far as points. And when you look at what they have as far as roster, you know, injuries come into play, obviously. I mean, we are talking about a contact sport here. But the fact that when you look at what they bring to the ice, to me, there's no reason in the world why they can't make that achievement and achieve that, making it three straight years of 100 or more points.
Yeah, and as you said, obviously very, very early. But nonetheless, you know, just some signs I've been seeing in the Preds games I've watched. I get a better sense about this team than I did last year. You know, even though last year's team, as you mentioned, went over the 100-point mark and won a second straight Central Division title, I just thought there were so many ups and downs, inconsistencies, and I thought goaltending had to carry them too often. I just get the sense that there's a bit of a new attitude, more of an aggressive attitude for this team. And then you throw in the fact that, you know, they brought in a new assistant coach specifically for the power play, and boom, they've got, I think, at least one power play goal in each of their games so far. And it's a big difference. It's a team, as I say, that's a lot of fun to watch. They don't seem like they're out of any game, even if they're down by two or three goals.
Oh, so if you are playing a particular sport, whether it's hockey or football, baseball, whatever it is, and there's a weakness, whether on power play or offensive line or whatever, and if you bring in a new mindset, you can actually enjoy success. Is that what you're saying?
You address it. Yes, you address this weakness. The Preds certainly had no choice in that respect, because really last year they ran the gamut, of trying assistant coaches, giving a shot to the power play. I think Peter Laviolette himself, said, okay, let me take a whirl with the power play, and nothing was working. They finished last in the league, so at that point, I think the only thing they could do, I thought that one of the assistants might lose their job and they bring in a new assistant. To the Preds' credit, I guess they kept everybody intact and added, Dan Lampert, and boy, what a difference he has made.
I mean, plus we go back to with the addition of Matt Duchene as well. Sometimes, you're talking about adding somebody not just from a talent standpoint, but you're also adding a different mix as far as that team chemistry, because for whatever reason, yeah, last year's team, 100 points, but, you look at them, and if you didn't know that and you just watched them and the lack of, at times a lot of disconnect, and as P.K. Subban addressed it during the season, there was lack of communications at times on the ice and off the ice. It just seemed like a team that, a lot of talented individuals, but not playing as a team per se throughout, and that's why they had the early exit. But To me, early on, like I said, it's still early, but I like what I'm seeing and the fact that they're entertaining as well.
Yeah, you know, and to me, one of the symptoms last year that we saw was, you know, slow starting Predators teams. It seemed all too often, you know, they would come out of the gate very sluggish and, you know, kind of had to play themselves into the game, and, you know, too often were giving up the first goal in games, and they were trailing. And, you know, when they got to the playoffs, even though they were the favorite team, I don't think it shocked too many people at all that they were upset in the first round, you know, just because they hadn't set any kind of standard of real quality, consistent play, despite that point total. I think, if anything, that Matt Duchene mindset, you know, he's always been a very offensive-minded player, and he has taken it to another level here. He's clearly a very, very happy guy. You know, he's on a good line. And as I say, opponents can't stack up against him because you still got to worry about the Ryan Johansson line as well, too. So it's a good place to be for the Predators right now.
John, thank you as always. Before we let you go, for those that have maybe not heard about the Athletic here in Nashville, let them know what they can expect.
Yeah, give us a look over at the Athletic, great sports website. We've been in Nashville for over a year now. Really great coverage. We've got the Titans covered, Predators covered. Joe Rexrode as our columnist is doing a good job. We've got another reporter up in Knoxville for the Vols. And, of course, with the Athletic, you get coverage not only in Nashville and Tennessee, but all over the country, Canada. We've got even soccer coverage abroad in Europe, too. We've expanded in the last year. So it's a tremendous bargain. As far as my stories go, give me a look there at the Athletic website. I cover the Titans, and follow me on Twitter at Glennon Sports.
John, thank you as always. I'll see you at the stadium on Sunday, but until then, have a wonderful week.
Okay, thanks, Johnny.
Thank you, buddy. John Glennon joining us again with the Athletic here in Nashville. A little bit later this hour, Kayla Anderson, sports reporter, sports anchor with News 2, WKRN-TV here in Nashville. We'll be with you until 7 tonight in the 6 o'clock hour. Doug Segrist joins us out of Birmingham, formerly with the Nashville Banner. We'll talk SEC with Doug. He is a co-host in the TV show The Zone on Sunday nights on ABC 3340. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
Southern hospitality with a modern twist. Kitchen Notes in the Omni Nashville Hotel offers a farm-to-fork experience for breakfast, lunch, supper, and Sunday brunch. Kitchen Notes uses the freshest ingredients to create great food in a casual dining atmosphere. Don't miss Nashville's only award-winning biscuit bar, serving up a house-crafted sweet, savory, buttermilk, and gluten-free biscuit every day. Try our award-winning patty melt or the grilled pimento cheese sandwich with a side of house-made Tennessee honey slaw, and dessert is always a must in our house. Whether it's in the main dining room or two of our private dining rooms, be sure to make Kitchen Notes part of your downtown Nashville experience. Check out Kitchen Notes at the Omni Nashville. For reservations, call 615-761-3700. Complimentary Valet parking is always available.
Let me tell you about my good friend Kenneth. He has the site, which is soulstreetcoffee.com. 8 different blends, 16 teas on there. And he is the exclusive sponsor of Kevin Hagan every Wednesday at 7 o'clock, talking Alabama football, Alabama sports. That's soulstreetcoffee.com. I need you to order now. It is a fantastic product. You will absolutely love it. That's soulstreetcoffee.com.
Want to say a hello to my buddy James Warren. He was a classmate of mine, 1977 at BGA. He's also the owner of Sir Speedy of Berry Hill, and James joins us. James, what do you want people to know about your business?
Well, here's the thing. If you look anywhere, you see signage. A business without signage is like a car with a flat tire. It's not going anywhere fast. Sir Speedy Berry Hill can change that. We are a trusted resource for sign design and production. Whether you need trade show displays, banners, posters, directional signs, window decals, wall graphics, you name it, Sir Speedy Berry Hill's sign capabilities can help your business get noticed.
Okay, tell them where you're located, all the particulars.
So we're at 2400 Phelps Avenue off of Melrose in lovely Nashville, Tennessee. Our phone number is 615-832-9511. You can look at us at SirSpeedyMusicCity.com. Email us at print@SirSpeedyMusicCity.com. We've got you.
It's the NFL on Sports USA. This week, the Los Angeles Rams charge into Atlanta to face the Falcons. The Rams have Goff firing lasers downfield to Kupp and Cooks. Then it's Gurley rumbling into the end zone.
10-5, touchdown, Todd Gurley!
The Falcons have their own passing attack with Matt Ryan airmailing it to Julio, Ridley, or a delivery for Mr. Hooper. It's the Rams at the Falcons this Sunday on Sports USA.
Pre-game coverage begins at 11:30 on WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
Call the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show now.
615-844-5600. Welcome back. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios on tap tonight. Brought to you by Penn Station East Coast Subs. Check them out. Locations to serve you in Hermitage. Also, the two locations in Murfreesboro, Memorial Boulevard or Medical Center Parkway. For the month of October, try the Philly Cheesesteak Sub with chips and drink at a special price. Penn Station, it's all about good taste. All right, so first things first, Washington last night. And I still go back, very first game I ever saw as far as Major League Baseball, it was a quote-unquote exhibition game. And this is before they got really fancy with their titles. And but I go back, and it was the Washington Senators, and I was all of 7 years of age. And their manager, the legendary Ted Williams, and this is before the Senators moved to Texas. We fast forward, the Washington Nationals, after sweeping St. Louis, we know the National League representative. We're still waiting on the American League representative, and there'll be no game tonight, postponed due to the weather. Houston leading the series 2-1. That means game four now tomorrow night, 7:08 start time from New York, and then it really puts a burden on the pitching, because then no day in between when we'll have Friday night with the matchup with the Yankees hosting Houston. That's going to be on FS1, which caused the Ohio State Buckeyes game with Northwestern, which was originally on a Friday night, going to be on FS1. It shifts to the Big Ten Network, and I don't know about you, I don't have the Big Ten Network, so I won't be watching that. So a little bit of switching around and a little bit of everything else, as Washington can just relax, get their rotation the way they want it, and play the wait-and-see game, whether it's going to be Houston or the Yankees. As far as moving forward with regards to the NFL, we talk about the move with Marcus Mariota being benched. Ryan Tannehill will get the start. 3:05 start time from Nissan Stadium on Sunday with the 2-4 Los Angeles Chargers and Phillip Rivers coming to town to take on the 2-4 Titans. This week in the NFL kicks off as far as Week 7 tomorrow night with Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. They're vulnerable. Two losses in a row, right? 4-2, but they're 3-0, by the way, away from Kansas City. Both of their losses actually occurred at home in Kansas City. They'll be on the road taking on Denver. That's tomorrow night, 7:20 start time as far as starting off and kicking off Week 7 of the NFL. Coming up on the other side, a chance to talk some Tennessee Vols, Vanderbilt, Tennessee Titans, and more. Award-winning sports reporter, sports anchor Kayla Anderson with News 2 WKRN-TV here in Nashville. She's coming up. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
Hello, I'm Tom Hodges of Goggin Cold Hall, a regional refrigerated company that operates within a 500-mile radius of our home in Smyrna, Tennessee. We're seeking professional drivers to join our family-owned business. Our number one priority of serving our customers is by taking care of our employees first. With a $1,000 sign-on bonus plus a driver referral program, Goggin Cold Hall offers an excellent benefit package with a 401k retirement plan, paid vacations and holidays, insurance options, and a competitive pay structure that includes includes weekly, monthly, and quarterly bonuses. No Northeast travel, no touch freight, and with our late model Freightliner and Kenworth equipment, we promise to treat you in a first-class manner. If you're interested in joining our family at Goggin Cold Haul, please visit www.goggincold.com. That's www.goggincold.com or call us at 931-225-3873. That's Goggin Cold Haul, the coldest team in town.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, please, have a seat. So here's the thing. When this company brought you on, we took a chance on you. You didn't have that four-year college degree we typically look for.
Right.
But we gave you a shot anyway. And since then, you've worked incredibly hard and given it your all.
Thanks.
You've been an important asset to the team, but I don't think you can be an intern here anymore. We want to hire you.
You're serious?
Absolutely.
Find your next great employee. Introduce yourself to the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
I won't let you down.
I know.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Penn Station likes to mix it up. Cold subs for lunch, grilled subs for dinner, wraps and salads, fresh cut fries, chocolate chunk cookies. So whether we grill, we fry, or we bake, we like to give you plenty of options. Penn Station, it's all about good taste.
Visit Penn Station East Coast Subs in Hermitage and the two locations in Murfreesboro on Memorial Boulevard or Medical Center Parkway. For October, try the Philly cheesesteak sub with chips and drink at a special price. Penn Station, it's all about good taste.
Five-State Forecast. Your exclusive Nashville Sports Radio, WNSR SkyCan Forecast. For this afternoon, sunshine and fall cool air settling in with a low 63. Tonight's going to be clear and cool with a low 41. Thursday's going to be sunny with a high 63. Slightly warmer for Friday, sunshine with a high 70. Utilizing the resources of the WeatherBug Network on Nashville Sports Radio. I'm WNSR's Shannon Holly.
Sports Radio, WNSR.
This is the Johnny Ballpark Frank Show, every weekday afternoon on Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios. Coming up at the top of the hour, just after 6, Doug Segrist, formerly with the Nashville Banner, talking SEC. He's down in Birmingham, a co-host on the TV show The Zone on ABC 3340. But right now, going back to the hotline, our good friend Kayla Anderson, award-winning sports reporter, sports anchor with News 2, WKRN-TV here in Nashville. Kayla, thank you as always, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, Johnny, good to be back. Hope your week's going well.
So far, so good. Much better than Marcus Mariota's weeks. And surprised at all by the announcement?
Nah, not surprised at all. I will tell you this. I was in Denver for Sunday's game, and I'm not lying when I say this. When he came out for that second drive, I kind of knew something was just not right, and I tweeted out shortly after that I thought that there was going to be a quarterback change in that game. Obviously, it came in the second half, but it did happen. And I think I knew from that point just that this team needed to go in a direction right now with Ryan Tannehill, because right now nothing has worked offensively, and they at least have to give Tannehill a try, considering the fact that they brought him in kind of for that reason, whether it be Mariota got hurt or if he just wasn't executed.
Well, and I said this after the Indianapolis loss. For me, this wasn't a decision made just because of what transpired on Sunday in Denver. To me, the conversation started coming up. And, you know, you could even make the argument, the reason why Ryan Tannehill's even here in the first place, it wasn't that they can say all what they wanted to. The bottom line is, at no point when Marcus Mariota has been on this roster until Ryan Tannehill, there's not been one single quarterback on that roster to push and replace Marcus Mariota, even challenge him for the starting job. Not one single. I mean, I've never seen a position as starting QB in the NFL where the keys were just handed over and you didn't have to beat out anybody for the job. Never have seen that ever. And now we're probably moving on, but you don't know. I mean, who's to say that in 3 weeks from now, Mario will have another opportunity, and how he will respond, we don't know. But my guess at this point tells me, based on what we've seen through the first 4-plus years, that the Titans will be moving on as far as the quarterback spot is concerned.
Yeah, I think Mike Vrabel today, and I kind of wish he would have worded this differently, but he did kind of leave things open-ended when he said he was asked about just, you know, moving forward beyond this Sunday, and he kind of left it open that there could be opportunities in the future depending on what happens with Tannehill. And I think at this point you just need to be all in on saying Ryan Tannehill is what we're going with moving forward. Now, is there a case where Tannehill might get hurt, or, you know, maybe he throws 4 interceptions in the first, you know, game that he starts in on Sunday? Who knows? And they decide at some point to go back to Mariota. There's definitely a chance that that happens. But I think as a future with Mariota as a quarterback next year, I don't think he's here.
The other part that kind of, and I go back to with this transition from Mike Mularkey to Mike Vrabel, it was all about the fact that we felt like change was necessary to take the team to another level, right? This was coming off of a year where the Titans, you know, they go on the road and they beat Kansas City. But I didn't disagree with the move, but mainly because of the fact that, yeah, it was great that they get the road playoff win. The bottom line is that team should have been hosting a playoff game, and they blew it down the stretch. And then they blew it the year before. So I didn't really have a problem moving forward. But the problems I do have, if you're going to go the direction with the Mike Vrabel, who's never coached in the NFL, you better get somebody talented with experience as your defensive coordinator and also your offensive coordinator. What have we talked about the last 2 years? How solid? What is the defense for the Titans? And guess what? They have an experienced defensive coordinator. What has been a weakness for the Titans? Their slow start last year cost them a playoff spot. They never should have been in the position that they found themselves in against the Colts in that final game. And what happened was the fact that a Matt LaFleur had never called a single down in the NFL ever before. And guess what? The Titans are in the same situation this year. It's like learn on the job training here. We're in the NFL. You don't have to be that, especially if you're trying to go from good to great.
Well, I think the other problem is if you even look at it even closer, there has been a major digression of the offensive line. And when you saw some of the guys that were in here coaching that line before, they were good. The line was sufficient. Then you see what has happened since Vrabel has come in. And I'm not saying this is all on Vrabel. I think John Robinson has partly something to do with it too. But you bring in a guy like Keith Carter, who was a running backs coach in Atlanta, and you think that's a good decision as a hire for that offensive line, a guy who has no experience. Some of the decisions on this coaching staff, I kind of scratch my head.
Well, and I go back to the fact, too, I don't know if that concerns you more or the fact that when talking about the offensive line over the last couple of weeks and the lack of productivity, Mike Vrabel defending his coach, which means all the problems with the offensive line is with the personnel, has nothing to do with coaching. And if that's what he truly believes, then there's a bigger problem there.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is to that because I'm not in that room. I'm not in that meeting room every day with those guys. I talked to, obviously, Saffold after the game, the loss on Sunday. I talked to Taylor Lewan. These are guys that are getting paid a lot of money to do their jobs. And they keep on saying, you know, we need to do our jobs and we need to be better. Well, okay, how do you get better then? Because clearly nothing's changing. And in my opinion, when nothing's changing, you have to at least start doing things to make change. And if that, you're not going to know if it's the coach or not unless you get rid of him. And in my opinion, like, start somewhere on that offensive line because right now nothing's working.
Well, Kayla, I think the most honest response we've heard over the last couple of weeks is somebody who also has had certainly not lived up to his nice salary he's getting this year, Roger Saffold, who talked about the fact that, yeah, you know, the bottom line is they were problems before I got here, meeting with the offensive line. I think that it was the most telling and honest answer we've heard over the last two or three weeks. I know it's a little deflecting some of the blame, and there was certainly blame needing to go his way, but I think from the big picture standpoint, I think there was a lot of honesty in that answer.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that you're lying there. I mean, Roger Saffold, like you said, I think sometimes he seems maybe to deflect the blame a bit, but here's the thing. He's been on a losing team before. He knows, you know, what surrounds that and what happens when you're not winning. And I will say this, he has stood up as a leader, at least on that line, and talked after every single loss and been in that locker room after every single loss and answered questions. And you can pick apart his answers as much as you want, but at least he's been there and he's been answering those, because I can't say the same for any of the other linemen except for Taylor Lewan, who just returned.
Let's look at the Vanderbilt Commodores. You know, for me, I love my relationship with Derek Mason, head coach of the Commodores. I have to be honest with you. I bought in firmly to the fact that even with a defense that we expected to be not the kind of defense that we grew accustomed to with the Commodores, you know, 4 years, 5 years ago, we just felt like the offense could still score enough points to compensate for that, correct? But here's the problem. At 1-5, losing to UNLV, which to me is probably the most ugliest loss on his resume so far as head coach of Vanderbilt, even more so than that first time out with Temple. Between that, the fact that, you know, they might as well not even made the trip to Oxford to take on Ole Miss, and then even before that, just, you know, almost giving the game away to Northern Illinois in that second half. You can't just quit. It's not like there's only two games remaining and you can just pack it in and mail it in the last 2 weeks. You're halfway there. You still have six games to play before this season is over. And to me, there's going to be some opportunities there for folks that may not have as much talent as some of the other players that are getting action. But if they've got heart, they'll have some opportunities over these next 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I mean, I've been here, obviously, a couple years covering Vanderbilt. And you know, we've seen some pretty decent years from them and seen what Derek Mason can do with the talent that he's had. And I think coming back this season, the question mark was at that quarterback position when we talk about the offensive side of the ball. And clearly neither of those quarterbacks have done anything in terms of production and just being able to be consistent. I mean, he's gone back and forth a little bit between the two of them. And then you got guys that came back in Keyshawn Vaughn and Pinckney and Lipscomb. And now there's nothing there. And I think there's a lot of frustration because, you know, they're not able to do what they were doing last year. And whether or not they came back to finish unfinished business or whatever it might be, it's just not working out at all this season. I think more so, though, defensively, because Mason is a defensive guy, I've just been disappointed with the defensive effort. And I'm not quite sure, you know, how you can, like, break that all down or if you put the blame all on him. But it is a bummer because you see the passion that he coaches with, and I think his players do believe in him as a head coach, but right now it just seems like nothing is working for that team.
Having a chance once again to visit with Kayla Anderson. Coming up on Saturday night, Tennessee going into Tuscaloosa to take on the Crimson Tide. They've been waiting and waiting and waiting to display all of their bells, whistles, their new lights. They finally get a night game, kickoff just after 8. To me, it's not this game that's the most important for Tennessee. It's how they respond after this game with Alabama. You still got to play it. But, you know, based on, you know, experience and what has happened in this series with 12 straight losses to Alabama, to me, I look at the next game, South Carolina, because starting that stretch with five games to go, Tennessee most likely will be in a position where they have to win four of the next five to be bowl eligible. South Carolina is, to me, the most important game of the season. I know from a coaching standpoint, it's this game. But looking at that schedule, you can't allow, if you do lose, and say if you lose big, you can't allow one loss to all of a sudden impact you the very next week. You're going to have to forget about it immediately and get yourself back in a position, because we saw what South Carolina did this past Saturday to Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, that's the the joy of coaching. And, you know, how, I guess for Jeremy Pruitt, how does he prepare his guys this week when you're going up against the biggest giant in college football. And like you said, I mean, let's be real, they're not going to win this game. But at the same time, I think you still have to get these guys juiced up. I think if Maurer does start, you know, he's been really good in terms of kind of rallying this team. And I like what he's done as a quarterback. But then again, how much, even if he is ready to go, how much do you really want to play him in this game? Because, like you said, you know, you've got South Carolina coming up. I think that is really a big game and a game that they could win. But it is, that's the part of coaching, though, and we're going to see it after this game, if it is indeed a loss, how Pruitt gets his guys ready to bounce back and try to compete with this South Carolina team that they can take down.
Before we let you go, remind everybody again the best ways to keep up with your coverage.
Yeah, you can follow me on Facebook, WKRN Kayla Anderson. Just go and like my page, just a little thumbs up, and then you can also follow me on Twitter, very active there, at Kayla Anderson TV.
Kayla, thank you as always. Have a wonderful rest of the week, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you again. Kayla Anderson with News 2 WKRN TV here in Nashville. 2 hours in. We still have another hour to go. We'll be with you tonight until 7. We always appreciate you listening. If you'd like to be a part of the show, 615-844-5600. You're listening to Nashville Sports Radio.
The award-winning Bob's Steak and Chop House, located in the Omni Nashville Hotel, is a nationally renowned steakhouse specializing in the finest corn-fed Midwestern prime beef. The menu formula is simple: incredible meat, gigantic shrimp, fabulous salads, and decadent desserts. Classic steakhouse food prepared and presented in a manner that Bon Appetit calls the kind of fare you'll want to go back for again and again. And voted one of the top 50 restaurants in the country by Travel and Leisure magazine, the most romantic steakhouse House in Nashville, and won the Wine Spectator Award for the second consecutive year, and one of only 11 steakhouses in America that serves A5 Wagyu steak. For reservations, call 615-761-3707. That's 615-761-3707. Bob's Steak and Chop House, where complimentary valet parking is always available.
This is Brent Musburger's Action Update for WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on candidates in an online dashboard at Indeed.com/hire. Now, here are the latest lines from my guys in the desert.
Thursday Night Football has the 2-4 Denver Broncos playing host to the 4-2 Kansas City Chiefs. Interestingly enough, Broncos started 0-4 but have won 2 in a row, while the Chiefs started 4-0 and have lost 2 in a row. Kansas City is favored by 3 in this contest, the over-under at 49. We have two college football games coming up on Thursday evening. Stanford will be at home against UCLA. Stanford, a 7-point favorite, over-under at 52.5, and Arkansas State hosting Louisiana. Louisiana, 6.5-point favorites, over-under at 68.
For the latest odds all the time, visit VSiN.com. I'm Matt Pauly. This has been your Action Update on Nashville Sports Radio.
The Klein Preston Law Group in Nashville, a proud supporter of the Atlanta Braves and Southeastern Conference, has over 2 decades of experience in litigation and transactional practice. Their practice focuses primarily on business law, including business litigation, business structure, and international law. The Klein Preston Law Group has represented clients from state and federal courts throughout the state of Tennessee to the United States Supreme Court. For more information, go to their website, Klein with a K, PrestonLaw.com.
Get all your NASCAR news every weekday right here on The Final Lap. Hey, it's Kerry Murphy, and Ryan Blaney takes home the win after a wild super speedway race from Talladega. Up next, the last chance for drivers to advance is at Kansas. So grab all the latest NASCAR news, race recaps, driver interviews, stats, and info every single weekday right here.
Hi, this is Ryan Blaney, and you're listening to The Final Lap with Kerry Murphy.
And check us out at Facebook.com/TheFinalLap. We'd appreciate it. Every single weekday right here.
Take Johnny Ballpark Franks on the go by downloading the WNSR app. Search your app store for Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Johnny Ballpark Franks with you, along with Jay Henson, broadcasting out of the Goggin Cole Hall Studios. Husker Richie in Nashville, welcome to the show.
Johnny, there's a lot of teams, not just Tennessee, but I don't think they're going to have a shot to beat Alabama until 2 or 3 years after Saban retires and all that talent leaves. And speaking of that talent, I felt like the 96 Florida team was the best SEC team I had ever seen at that point with the best offense. And you remember those guys, Reed L. Anthony, Ike Hilliard, Chuck Des Green, Werfel. I think this Alabama offense is better than that because I think Tua is considerably better than Werfel. What do you think?
I will say that normally I would say you're correct, except for the fact 2009, an unranked Tennessee team, a blocked field goal away from upsetting the number one team in the country. And then also we go back to 2010, the number one team in the country, Alabama, that was 2015. An Alabama team ranked in the top 10, only leading 19-14 in the waning moments of the fourth quarter. And it was an unranked Tennessee team as well. Both games played in Tuscaloosa.
I mean, Tennessee's not going to beat them for years. But my point being, this year's Alabama offense, I think, could be better.
They were one play away in both of those games. I'll never say never. Never say never with regards to anything happening on the field, just like we saw with South Carolina beating Georgia last week. Have a good night.
Compare tonight.
Hour number three coming up. Stay with us, everybody.